Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Gist of Freedom. I am your host, Dr. Weldon McWilliams. And today we have guests, Mr. Tony Johnson, the State Superintendent of Education in Washington, D.C. Mr. Johnson, are you on?
Yes, sir, I am.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to finally talk to you. And today we just wanted to have more or less a conversation. Mr. Johnson, again, as I stated earlier, you are the State Superintendent of Education in Washington, D.C. If you could just tell our listeners a little bit of what that entails and what that position entails.
Well, let me clarify my title. Although I would love to be the State Superintendent of Education, I'm the State Director for Career and Technical Education in the Office of the State Superintendent of Education.
Okay.
So what my charge is to support career technical education in our high schools, both in our public schools and our charter schools, both to support the funding of, the direction of curriculum, the alignment of standards, and the professional development of teachers so that our students have a seamless pipeline from high school to higher education opportunities. So we have a very interesting system here in the District of Columbia where 42% of our school-age children are enrolled in charter schools. Mm-hmm. The mayor controls our public school realm. So we have a separate chancellor of public schools. We have a D.C. charter school board. And, of course, we have our post-secondary higher education institutions. So in the Office of the State Superintendent of Education, it serves as the same function as you would find state departments of education. So we are over the school system, in both the public and the charter school system.
Okay. And what in your background, I guess, lends itself to that position? Or, what is it that someone, a youngster or someone would have to take interest in order to get to a position such as yours?
Of course, securing a degrees, but more so just really having passion for this work. So for me particularly, I never really started out to be an educator. I was a teacher part-time while working on my master's degree in public policy. And it really was kind of a way that I wanted to kind of give back to the community while working a flexible job around my graduate coursework. Mm-hmm. And I just had a very, very deep love and passion for it, particularly if I could maybe give you a brief story of my first teaching experience. I interviewed for the job because it was a posting at an alternative school, and I went through the interview, and it's all successful, and the assistant principal says, I definitely want to hire you to be a teacher here. And I said, okay, great. So she says, can you meet me tomorrow at the county jail? And I said, why are we meeting at the county jail? She says, you're going to be my teacher for my the inmates here at the alternative school. And I said, really? That's not what I thought I interviewed for. So she got out the job description, and it definitely said diverse learners in a diverse environment. And I said, okay. I'm all about diversity, just not sure if I was about that. So, went home, prayed about it, talked to a couple friends about it, and they says, Tony, what better way to impact people's lives than those who have made a couple mistakes along the way? So that was my kind of introduction to my first teaching opportunity.
Great, great. And as a child, did you have because you stated that your interest was in, or your degree is in public policy, so as a child, did you have an interest for working with the public and being able to create certain policies for the public?
I did. I was raised by my mother in a single-parent home. My father was, my mother and my father parted ways when I was 2 years old, but he was also addicted to drugs and the whole nine yards. So for me, I always kind of knew that one important mentor, positive adult role model in the home made the big difference. So just seeing a lot of the other young brothers in the neighborhood who took different paths because they didn't have that one supportive person just kind of always propelled me to make use of this great opportunity I had, and a real strong mother that supported me in a meaningful way. So I knew that I wanted to go to college. I knew that I wanted to study the legal system. So at a point, I thought I was headed to law school, but the more I started studying the public policies, I wanted to do more than just be in a law room, in a courtroom, arguing and trying to get people out of cases that they're trying to get accused of. So I said, what can I do more? What can I do more? So when I started that first teaching opportunity at the county jail, that was when the light went off for me of this is what mine looks like. So from there, my career kind of continued where I assumed different roles, director of alternative education, director of corrections education, and just with folks who just kind of made mistakes along the way. And right. I just know that education is that great equalizer and just the opportunity to support people who are trying to get back on track.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier about the importance of role modeling. And, I mentioned earlier, I think in talking with you, I'm the acting director of a program at Cheney University called Call Me Mister. And what
Absolutely.
This is a program, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's a program that you try to encourage African-American men to become teachers in the public school system, but not just teachers, but it's actually a program to increase African-American male mentors and role models. So if you can, how do you integrate bringing, role models into the teaching process or into the school system there in Washington, D.C.? Is that something that, is focused upon?
Unfortunately, we don't have a great program like Call Me Mister that operates on a district-wide kind of program. I do know that the schools are very excited about African-American males who apply for teaching and principalship opportunities.
Right.
So to that extent, there's kind of an unofficial network to try to get African-American men in the classroom so that they are these role models for a lot of our young men and women who need to see that from us. Okay. Because as you already know, the media gives its own portrayal of who we are.
Right.
So it's important that we counter that.
Right. So perhaps maybe in the future, there's a future for integrating, role modeling and mentoring from African-American males and African-American females, maybe entering that into the curriculum somehow, some way. Perhaps there's a future for that?
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, I think it's definitely needed. I know Howard University had a grant to do something similar to the Call Me Mister. I'm not sure. That was a couple of years ago that I last heard about that.
Mm-hmm.
But its graduates were about 20 candidates per cohort. So mm-hmm. I definitely know that Arne Duncan recently being released within the last 2011, talked about how he is definitely committed to more African-American male teachers in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
and that he is also committed to putting a lot of resources behind that. So anything that I can do to help support that on a national scope, I just think is very, very critical.
Right. Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, correct, in the Obama administration.
Yes, sir.
And Call Me Mister, just for our listeners, again, I just wanted to re-explain. Call Me Mister is a program that was founded 11 years ago, and it started at Clemson University. Dr. Jones is the executive director of the Call Me Mister program now. And it's very, very popular and prominent throughout South Carolina and the South. Again, it's a program that seeks to encourage African-American males to become teachers in the public school systems. And in its attempt to kind of broaden itself from the South to the North, the Call Me Mister program extended itself up north to Cheney University right outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And it's been at Cheney University for 3 years now. And this is my first year as acting director, but before I was there, it was under the leadership of Mr. Howard John, who was an original Mr. Graduate. And they've had many success stories. There's relationships built with certain elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools in which tutoring takes place, mentorship takes place, and workshops are given and things of that sort. I know this year we have also had a workshop with a group called the Philadelphia Futures. And this is an organization that tries to get high school students throughout the 26 different high schools in Philadelphia. They come together and meet on a weekly basis, and I know the Call Me Mr. program, we've held workshops for them. And in May, we'll also be featured in Arcadia's Black Male Development Symposium. That will take place in May, and we're going to be one of the features. There'll be some of our misters will be presenting in a workshop as well. I know I will also be doing a workshop on redefining success. So I think the Call Me Mr. program, is going to definitely do things. And Mr. Johnson, if you have an opportunity, I definitely hope we can stay in contact because I would like to invite you out to some of the things that are taking place up here so that maybe we can find a way to kind of broaden the experience of the Call Me Mr. program and bring something like that or something similar to that to the D.C. area. Because as you stated before, to see to have African-American men in positions of influence and positive men in positions of influence and mentorship, I think that goes a long way. And the numbers show that when young men, and I think even if young girls, when they see that positive African-American males, it makes such a tremendous difference in their life. So I definitely hope that we can stay in contact and maybe we can talk about how we could bring something like that to D.C. or something similar to D.C.
Absolutely. I definitely welcome that. Absolutely.
So as you're in your job underneath the Office of Education in Washington, D.C., what are some current trends that you are seeing and trends that, you're working to combat? What are some of the issues there in particular in Washington, D.C., that you're working to improve?
One of the things I think in terms of the education reform movement, I'm just really excited that we're kind of moving away from the conversation of these are the challenges that we are having here and others outside of this system don't understand it. And I think we're more having a conversation about in urban education reform, we're sharing some of these same challenges, whether that is challenges in the home life, students having an inferior education, not having high qualified teachers as some of their counterparts in suburban districts and those kind of things. So I think it's really important, and what I'm happy that we're doing in the district is we are applying for and have secured a number of different grant opportunities. And we're working in a way so that these grants all kind of work in support of each other and not kind of in silos. So I'm very happy to see that and that we are putting resources in the schools that need it the most. We have a number of schools that post achievement scores in the one digits. So to the extent that these funds are used to bring in different nonprofits to provide a lot of wraparound services for the youth, I'm very excited about that. I'm also excited that a lot of our programs we're bringing into schools also provide after-school opportunities to open up the doors to the community where parents can come in and be involved in adult education. We're also working with community college to bring courses in all the neighborhoods and some of the neighborhood schools so that parents can further their post-secondary interests as well in the neighborhood schools. I think D.C. Is doing a lot of the same kind of activities that we see in a lot of the other urban school districts through the nation. So I'm excited that we're working together in that process. So in the past, the Office of State Superintendent of Education was viewed as kind of like a watchdog of some of the local education agencies. But I'm glad that we have kind of moved from that, and we're more viewed as a partner in education reform. And as a partner, it's showing some great gains for where we're going.
Okay, good. Quick question. What do you think about Harlem's Jeffrey Canada in the Harlem Zone? And what do you think about that school and its impact on education and its influence on education?
I think it's a great goal. My only critique about it is I do want us to move away from the belief that it takes millions of dollars to make it happen. That's the only thing that I don't agree with. I think that the Harlem Children's Zone is more about the collaboration of interconnected entities that touch children more than money being necessary for it to be replicated.
I think it's
great, but I don't think we need millions to replicate it. And I think if we wait for millions to replicate, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just saying I think that is an excellent point that, you know, something like a Harlem Zone, that should be the norm or the standard for all education.
Absolutely.
And not necessarily the exception. And I think if we can move to a place where that becomes the norm, that will speak and do wonders. But again, you know, the amount of money that is needed for that, you know, for the Harlem Zone to function the way it does, you know, that also speaks to some of the disparities that exist in the fact that, or in the sense that, not everybody is able to, you know, take advantage of an educational opportunity like that. So that is something that, you know, we as a people, we as a nation, need to definitely work to try to improve and make sure that all of our children are at a point where they could receive an education like that.
Absolutely.
I do understand that you were at a screening a few weeks ago. The Gist of Freedom had a screening in Black in America, a screening with Judge Navarro Wright. And I just wanted to get your opinions on that screening. What did you think about that?
I thought it was great. It basically, for those who haven't had an opportunity to see the Black in America series, the one that focuses on the promised land of African Americans in Silicon Valley, I think as educators, we all know that one of the two kind of top reigning career opportunities that are growing exponentially is, of course, healthcare and technology. And I think we should do more in our school systems to support our students in looking at being entrepreneurial as well as technology, because, as you know, Weldon, that, you know, students can excel in technology even if they're not successful in some of the other academic areas.
Right.
And I think that we should do more to provide those opportunities for children. We're starting a pilot here in D.C. With Microsoft, where we're working with a couple of schools to get kids into courses that they're going to sit for Microsoft certification. And a lot of those certifications, as you know, are kind of layered certifications. So our goal is that by the senior year, if these students decide to not go to college, that they'll have a number of certifications as they enter the workforce. So, as you said before about the Harlem Children's Zone, we want to see that kind of become a norm, where we equip our children with a lot of opportunities outside of what education used to look like. It's just a standard high school diploma.
Right. And you bring up another good point, the importance of perhaps vocational training.
Absolutely.
And how, and I'm not sure what it's like in District of Columbia, but I know in Philadelphia, you know, that's kind of been taken out of the forefront and eliminated from the school system as far as the need and, you know, just vocational training, which is also, I think, an important part and an important component of education. So I just wanted to get your opinion on that, the importance of vocational training. You know, is that, what is this, you know, status of vocational training in the District of Columbia?
The District of Columbia definitely has had a renewed focus in vocational education. I think one of the challenges just in urban school reform is the whole notion of accountability, which of course is very important. But I think what we're going to find in the next few waves of accountability movement is that you can hold schools accountable and school systems accountable, but this whole kill and drill isn't going to help students to achieve academic gains. And I think the next accountability movement will see more thematic schools. I was very excited last year in D.C. when I saw the number of different charter school groups who were petitioning for charters, and they just had a lot of different innovative ways. One of them, for instance, was focused on a green technology-infused middle school curriculum. Another looked at a public policy focused. Another looked at African-American literature-focused school. So just looking at some of these different innovative ways that we can get students excited about education, because we're competing with the iPod, iPad, and just a number of technological advances. We can't, as you know, and I know I'm preaching to the choir to you, Weldon, because you know this already. You know, we just got to make education exciting and be able to make it as exciting as what a lot of students' extracurricular activities are.
Right, right, right. Good point, good point. And you know, I was thinking, you know, as far as, you know, bringing a renewed sense of vocation, a lot of the communities, and I'm speaking from here in Philadelphia, what you begin to see is there's a correlation between poor schools and poor communities. And I was, you know, and this is a question I'm going to pose to you, Mr. Johnson, and perhaps we're at an interesting time in the education field or process, in the sense that there's going to probably be some redefining of things that needs to take place as far as education is concerned. Is there a way possibly where education could be tied into community development, where you know, one's education is directly linked to what goes on in his or her community, one's education is directly linked to how to improve his or her community? I'm wondering, you know, can we get to a point, or will we get to a point where education can be more, I guess, community-centered and community-based, in the sense that one's education is centered upon how it can also improve one's community? Mr. Johnson, you still there? Hello? Mr. Johnson, are you there? Hello? While we're trying to get Mr. Johnson back on the line, I think this is something that our listeners should really begin to think about. Perhaps how we could reshape and redefine what education is. Education perhaps being more centered on community activity. Mr. Johnson, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm sorry about that technology glitch.
No problem, no problem. I'm not sure if you heard my question, but let me just repeat it for you briefly.
Okay.
In this interesting point in time with education, and I'm saying, I think we're at a time now where, you know, people can influence how education is defined. Will we get to a point, or can we get to a point where education is going to be defined or linked to community development? For example, one's education, one quality of education, could directly impact one's quality of community. One's education can, you know, be linked to how to improve things going on in history, like it was, you know, during, you know, perhaps the reconstructing area. But because what I begin to see is poor schools are typically in poor neighborhoods. And perhaps if we can make education linked to the improvement of community, you know, perhaps we can be doing multiple things through the avenue of education. So I just wanted to get your opinion on that as far as tying education with community development.
I definitely agree, and I think we can. I think the big challenge is a lot of our students, all of our students now, have not experienced the Civil Rights Movement, and a lot of their parents have not experienced the Civil Rights Movement. Unlike you and I, our parents, we still hear the stories of when they went to segregated schools and their experiences of being denied equal education. So it appears to me that, like, the millennial generation believes that the struggle and the fight for educational equality is over, but I don't think they recognize what we recognize, that the fight is still current. It just looks different.
Right. And I think
when we provide professional development for our teachers, I think we need to empower them to have these honest dialogues with our students, that education is not just a matter of increasing one's socioeconomic status, but it's about what you just talked about, is that with education, you are able to come back and make meaningful impacts in your community and help turn around a number of those negative elements that are found in the community. And I think that as we know that 80% of classroom teachers are Euro-American suburban white women, but I think it's important that we provide them with the necessary tools to talk to our students, honestly, our minority students, about what their role and goal should be after they complete college to come back and give to their communities. I'm sorry?
No, I'm sorry. I was just agreeing with you, saying good point.
Oh, okay. No problem. I'm sorry. It's kind of windy here. I think because I think, you know, in the 70s and 80s, we relied on talking to our students about what their responsibility should be, was from one black educator to minority students. But I think that message can be carried by anyone who understands the struggle, what it was and what it looks like today.
Good point. And you mentioned something earlier. You mentioned making education fun again. And that's one of the things that I guess, as I talk to students in elementary school, middle school, and the high schools, they don't really have this sense of, education being fun. They almost view it as sort of like a punishment. So I guess I'm asking, you know, how do we make it fun again? How can we make a connection with our students where they see the relevance? How can they, make the connection for, like, a Shakespeare, for instance? How can they connect that with making an honest living and an exciting career, things of that sort? How could we make it more fun for the students?
Well, you know, I could talk about that for hours, but let me try to give you my quick response to that. I think a lot of our teachers are boring, if I could be honest and frank. And I think it really takes a different type of educator these days. Like, I think one of the reasons we see movies that portray exciting teachers that jump on desks and are very animated is that's the kind of excitement and zeal that students like and appreciate. And I think some of our teachers are more reserved than what this profession requires.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what some principals are looking for in teacher candidates is more about a mastery of the core content, but that has to also be balanced with, can you get these urban learners excited and motivated to see you every day and to participate in this learning process with zest and zeal? And I think that is equally as important when principals are screening teacher candidates and when they're working through their professional development plans. And lastly, on this note, I think we need to pay attention to the research. The research shows definite ways in which urban learners become more engaged, and I think that's what we need to use, is not those drill and kill, those straight line rows, you know, the quiet atmosphere. That's not what learning looks like for a lot of our diverse students in schools. But that, then again, here in 2012, we're still teaching as if this is the 17th century, and we're expecting 21st century outcomes. And I think that's just oxymoronic.
So with that being said, do you think we should move away from teachers' colleges and you know, recruit teachers with work experience, or, you know, something like, you know, jury duty for professionals, I guess? But how should we, how do we cure this, I guess, what's going on or what's lacking within our teachers?
Well, I wouldn't say, I taught in colleges of education, both at Florida State and here at George Washington University and a couple of other schools. And I wouldn't say that, but I would say that the way in which we're teaching our teachers, teacher candidates, is really no different than how we've always have done it. And I think one of the most heartbreaking conversations I've had was when I was teaching a introductory level to education at Florida State University. And when I read some of the evaluations, they were very positive for the most part. A couple students, you know, didn't agree. But for the most part, they were very positive. But the part that was disappointing was students said that they took this course because it wasn't offered at a convenient time early in their curriculum, and they are further along than when they should have taken this course, but that my introductory course was so meaningful and opened their eyes so much more than the 20 courses in education that they took prior to this intro course. And for some people, that might be exciting as an instructor. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, I did a great job. But for me, it meant we're not doing a good job, period, as a college of education. So to answer your question, I think we need to do a better job of the way in which we prepare teachers in colleges of education. I think alternative programs do it well sometimes, and I think colleges of education do it well sometimes, but I think we can all do it better all the time.
Good point. And I know I'm also a teacher at Cheney University as well. I'm a professor. And one of the things I think is very important, and as a former teacher in the school district as well, I think it's very important that, you know, one of the things that I couldn't stand when I was a student in public school was my teachers sitting in one spot for the whole day. You know, I make it a purpose for me to not sit down, to move around in the classroom, to keep them engaged, to stand and to walk around, to move around the classroom. And also I try to find a point where the student can find his or her relevance in the material. They can find why, you know, they can identify exactly why this is being taught to them and why this is something they should know. And I think oftentimes what has tend to happen as far as, you know, African-Americans and other quote-unquote minorities in the school system is that they don't see their relevance in the material that they're learning. They're not learning about it in a perspective that they will see how it will have a great influence on their lives. And I think that sometimes that's on the responsibility of the teacher to go, if he or she has to go out her way to really illuminate why certain lessons and points are relevant for that particular student or for the students he or she is teaching, I think that that's something that will keep the student's interest. They have to be able to see their relevance. Education has to start for them right where they are, and it cannot be taught, or they cannot learn it from an abstract notion or from a sense of where they're not relevant in it. So, I agree with you as far as the pedagogy maybe needs to be reviewed and how we go about teaching. And I think, if teachers can show the students where they are relevant in the material that they're teaching. I think that'll also improve as far as, you know, students showing their interest and displaying their interest in the material that's being given to them. Are you there, Mr. Jones? Mr. Johnson, I'm sorry. All right, we might have lost him again, but we'll wait for him to come back on. But I think that this is something that we need to think about, listeners, as far as our education. We're at a moment now where we might have to really begin to redefine, you know, what it means to be educated and what it means to teach. And maybe that can't be all defined strictly by curriculum per se, but maybe it has to be ingrained in the curriculum about making things relevant for the students, meeting the students where they're at, you know, teachers being active. These are things that we have to begin to think about as we try to reexamine and reevaluate what's going on in our educational system. I believe he's back on. You there, Mr. Johnson?
Yes, I'm here. All right, yes, I apologize, sir. Technology
no problem,
is not my
no
friend
problem.
Tonight.
Okay, I was just making the point that I believe that, you know, perhaps, like you stated before, the pedagogy and the style of teaching also needs to be reevaluated as far as, you know, making, you know, teaching in such a way where the student can see his or her relevance in the material that they're teaching.
Absolutely.
So that they can begin to see why or what is being taught to them, why it's important to them in their life at this moment.
Absolutely.
Right. So what are some things that you're currently working on right now in D.C.? What are some initiatives that we're currently working on, that you're currently working on right now? What would you say is the number one issue right now?
Specifically, this Microsoft Academy is very important,
right,
and we're definitely working to get that going because it's a pilot for right now, and our hope is that once it's no longer a pilot, we can have this type of program at all the schools. And we also are working with our career pathways, and you had talked a little earlier about the importance of vocational education.
Right.
And we're working to create a number of industry partners in all of our high schools so that students can see a direct connection why being successful in high school is important. And we're also trying to, we're going to start this a large media campaign where we're going to move the conversation away from college being the only avenue in which you are deemed to have made successful plans after high school.
Mm-hmm.
So that students can see that you can go to college, and that's a great opportunity if it's for you. You can go to the military if that's a viable option. You can do the technical school route, or you can go directly into the workforce. But this media campaign, we're going to be extremely focused on not that, so that students don't believe that they cannot do any of those because of their requisite knowledge, skills, and abilities, but that they are all choices, and whichever choice that they decide to go, we will support them as adults who are supporting their goals in a meaningful way. So those are kind of my two kind of very top things that I'm working on here in the district.
Great, great. And then we're getting ready to wrap up the show for this evening. So before we wrap up, is there any workshops or events that you'd like to invite the public to?
There's a number of events that we have going on. Our next event is going to be on March 16th. And it's going to occur at Gallaudet University. And that event is called Young Women's in Non-Traditional Careers. So we're going to focus on those careers that women are not in large numbers in those career fields. We're going to have a lot of very dynamic women coming from NASA doing presentations, and it's going to be a pretty full agenda. We are slated to be able to accommodate about 300 young ladies. So right now we're not at that capacity, so we strongly encourage folks to reach out to the Office of the State Superintendent of Education, Career Technical Education Department, and we can get young ladies in the district who are high school students registered for that event on March 16th.
And before you go, can you just briefly explain what STEM is for our listeners?
Sure. STEM is the thrust to get students involved and excited about science, technology, engineering, mathematics. It's both the support that is integrated across the curriculum. It's getting students to look at these as viable career options, and it's getting schools to link both their common core standards to increasing our students in mathematics and the science areas, because as you are well aware, that minority students don't do as well in those areas. So STEM provides a lot of kind of opportunities for internship experiences, Saturday academies. We do that here in the District of Columbia, where we provide support in math and science services for students so that they're able. And there's a lot of scholarships linked to STEM career as well. So STEM is very important. It's a hot topic. I have a friend of mine who I can't recall his organization off the top of my head, but he works a lot nationally with a lot of school districts to get STEM programs off the ground. So it's very, very important.
Great, great. And if any of our listeners wanted to get in contact with you, Mr. Johnson, how can they get in contact with you?
They could call me. My phone number just changed at the Office of State Superintendent of Education, I apologize. But they could look me up. Just ask for the D.C. Office of State Superintendent of Education, Tony Johnson, and they will link you to me, and I will give you my number once they transfer you to me, or you can shoot me an email at tony.johnson@dc.gov, and I'll be more than happy to respond to anything via email, talk to folks on the phone, or also travel out to different school districts and workshops to further this conversation so that we can get our students moving towards their goals.
That's great. And I just wanted to take this time out to also invite you to the Black Male Development Symposium that will be held at Arcadia University right outside of Philadelphia. And the gentleman of Call Me Mister, we will be highlighted at that symposium on the weekend of May 12th through the 14th. But Saturday, I think May 12th is the day that everything, workshops, presentations, that's the biggest day of the symposium weekend. And I hope that we can stay in contact, and we can definitely, I hope to see you there. I'm extending an invitation, but hopefully we could definitely work something out where I can see you and we can talk.
Absolutely. Now, listeners, you hear he keeps saying he hopes we stay in contact. And I'm going to do my part.
All right. and I'm going to do my part for sure. We're going to make sure that we make this thing happen, Mr. Johnson.
Sounds good.
And thank you again for taking time out to share with us some of the things going on education-wise in the Washington, D.C. area. And for my listeners, we thank you again for joining us to Gist of Freedom. Stay tuned as we continue to give you information that we know that you need. But until then, God bless. Take care.
All right. Thanks so much.
God bless.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.